Today, we are continuing our freelance business system series with the human resource portion. And in the past, during this series, we've gone back through and shown all the different parts of the series that we're going to go through. And I'll talk a little bit more again about what the series is. But I just want to take a second to talk about the title of today's webinar, because this idea of human resources, as we'll get into in the definition, is something a bit weird because it has two definitions. It has the definition of you as the human resource, or human capital, as people that sometimes call it, as well as this idea of the Department of Human Resources, the people who work in human resources, which sounds kind of weird. It's the people who work in people who are resources, right? But I want to kind of take all of that to focus on this idea that you are your business's most important resource, bar none, right? Because you do all of the work. Maybe, I know, like, some of you are starting to do some outsourcing, maybe for research or for some parts of some jobs that you do on top of your travel writing, or perhaps I know some people who have bookkeepers or things like that, but pretty much it's just you. And more importantly, you're also the only one who knows all the things. You are the only one who can do all the writing. You're the only one who can maintain all of your clients. So keeping you in top working form, which of course we talked about what top working form is and how to discover that and how to, you know, improve that in the operation segment that we did. But this idea of keeping you in top working form and whose job that is something that I think is so important that actually this webinar today of the human resources section in this series was the first one that I conceived when I was thinking about doing this freelance business system series, because it's one of the, that along with time management, that is human resources along with time management, which comes under operations that we talked about a lot the other day, are probably some of the things that I spend the most time talking with people about on coaching calls that they don't expect to actually be part of their business. And by that I mean things like, you know, health issues or needing to get out of the house, go for walks, do for other things like that to keep them happy, improving their workspace, different things like this that we'll talk about in terms of what falls under human resources. But this is one of the things that most surprises people that they need to be taken care of, because it's really affecting their work and it's very important. And as I was doing the research for the webinar today, I found a lot of places that actually said explicitly this, that said that human resources is really one of, if not the most important, you know, sections, if you will, of the company. And I think in a lot of larger companies, that comes down to this idea that human resources is in charge of recruiting and hiring. And like I said, we'll get into, as we get into the webinar, we'll get into more about exactly what human resources is. But I think that it's not just because human resources does the recruiting and the hiring and figures out who's going to work for the company. I think it's because the cost for any given company of turnover, of medical leave, of all sorts of these things is so high because it's not productive time. And in your freelance business, you probably know, you probably have had a time that you can remember where you were really sick, or where you had a personal family issue or medical issue with somebody that wasn't you, or something else like that, and what a toll that that took on your business. And what I want us to look at today is how, obviously, there's emergency things that come up that we can't necessarily safeguard against, but how, as a whole, we can create processes, procedures, sort of, you know, things that you do regularly to help support as much as you can to keep those things from happening. So particularly what we're going to talk about today is I've got a couple slides where we look at what human resources is exactly in terms of the definition, as well as kind of what are all the different things that human resources do. And I'm going to explore that in two parts. We're going to look at it in terms of how that applies to companies. And then I'm going to go and we're going to use a couple companies as case studies, as examples, and talk about how some of those things work there in more, you know, anecdotal form rather than just a list of different job functions that people do, but then we're going to bring it back and we're going to look back at that list of the different things that HR people do or that come under HR, and we're going to look at how that translates for us as freelancers. And then I have pulled together kind of a cool, I don't know if you want to call it cool, but I mean, I'm sure HR people call it cool, but an interesting survey to help how you think about not reviewing your performance as a technician, as a person who's doing the work, but how you think about interacting with yourself as your own manager, as the person who's deciding what work you're going to do, and things like that. So that's what we're going to look at today. This week, we are continuing, as I said, this series on business systems for freelance writers. And I've mentioned in the past why we are focusing on these sort of core business tenets, whether it's finance, which we've already looked at in operations and quality control, or we're going to start to get into sales and marketing and management soon as well. As in this month, we're looking at legal issues. We've also got one coming up on technical support and things like that. And the whole sort of conception of these webinars is, as I mentioned at the top of the call today, that these are things that are really important to any business, even just a freelance service provider business where you have, you know, like 1 to 5 clients that you work with regularly. If you don't think about these things, all of these things that we're looking at that I've narrowed down this list, even though it doesn't seem that narrow because there's like 16 webinars, but all of these things that we're looking at are things that if you don't consider them, will either just sink you or they'll come back to bite you in some way. And so what I noticed when I started freelancing myself is that there was really not so much information out there about how to have a business as a freelancer. There's, you know, tons of articles around for like small business owners and things like that that don't really seem like they're for us because they talk about things like, you know, getting set up as a storefront or like, you know, hiring employees or liability insurance and all sorts of different things. But there's not so much around what you need to think about to be a successful business. And what I've found is that people who have really stable, long-term freelance businesses are constantly taking time out of their schedule to do these other business functions that we've been looking at, whether it's finance and doing that forecasting of your cash flow, which is so, so, so important, as well as forecasting your income, or the management things that we're going to get to looking at, or even just these technical things like different apps that you can use to improve your time. If you're not sort of carving out that time, as they say, to work on your business rather than in your business, then it's going to run into problems for you at some point. But the particular thing about this webinar series is that we're really looking at how to do these things systematically. So in each webinar, I'm introducing kind of the concepts of what is important in this particular area of business, but then we're also looking at some really actionable ways, and I give a lot of different ideas so that wherever you are, it's kind of like a menu and you can just pick one and sort of start to integrate that you can start to think more about this area of your business. So as we get into talking about HR today, and I'm actually going to read this from my PowerPoint slide because I know that they're a little bit small on the slide and you can get all the slides later, right, so you can read these a little better. But what I've pulled today for the definitions of what HR is, explore kind of this dichotomy that we talked about before, which is that idea that human resources is used to describe both the people who work for a company or organization and the department responsible for managing resources related to employees. And I like this idea of resources related to employees rather than managing human resources in a certain way. And I know in the title of the webinar, I say you, the resource supported as a human, because we have to also think about that as our own individual companies, we have some resources at our disposal, primarily time, and depending on where you are with your business, also money. And there's different ways that we can use those resources to best support our employee of our company, you know, which is you, right? So the next definition is human resource management is a contemporary umbrella term used to describe the management and development of employees in an organization. also called personnel or talent management, although these terms are a bit antiquated. And I underlined the talent management here because I thought that was really interesting. I'm not sure how many of you guys have ever heard this term used in like a broadcast setting before. So for instance, like guests on Jimmy Fallon or something like that are called the talent, or like people who come on the morning news and do like a little cooking show segment, they're called the talent. And I think that's really cool, like an interesting way to, for us to think about it as freelancers, because to the companies that we freelance for, we are the talent that comes in. We are the subject matter expert. And so I like that kind of flip of definition, even though, as it said in this thing that I was reading, that idea of talent management is a bit antiquated. But I think for us, it's really cool to think about that, that, you know, we are the talent who shows up somewhere and does our thing with our, you know, writing talents, wordsmithing talents, whatever it is, descriptive talents, whatever you call it. And the idea that the management of the talent is around A, the management part, but also the development of employees in this or in organization. I mentioned also, you know, the conferences earlier, because that does tie into what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about professional development. And professional development, I think, is something that, you know, obviously anybody who's here listening to these webinars or following what we do is interested in. But I think that, you know, there's several different aspects of our professional development as a freelance business owning writer that we need to keep in mind at once. And that ties back into why I go to so many different conferences, because they all have different purposes. And we'll get to that in terms of this development bit in a minute. So the next one is, a human resources department of an organization performs human resource management, overseeing various aspects of employment, such as compliance with labor law and employment standards, administration of employee benefits, and some aspects of recruitment. Now, this is really interesting. I'm going to get into in a minute exactly kind of the functions, if you will, of HR, but this is actually the definition from Wikipedia, and I found a lot of other places reference this. And I found this definition kind of interesting because, A, it's really dry, as I was kind of saying as I was reading it, but it also really kind of boils into the like more legal administrative things that people in HR do in terms of, you know, filling out forms, being in compliance with labor law, you know, figuring out employee benefits, things like that. And like, those are not the sexy parts of HR, and we're not going to talk about them so much today, but it's worth remembering that back when, or if you still do have, but back when you had like another job, that there was somebody whose job it was to make sure that you had the right health plan, whose job it was to make sure that you were taking breaks or only working the number of hours that you were being paid to work and things like that. Because I know those are some areas where we tend to slack on managing our personal human resources as freelancers. Next one is, human resources are also responsible for the business's most important asset, the employees. Department or section managers have a responsibility for the direct subordinates. However, HR are responsible for all employees' well-being and concerns. And I liked this definition because it was interesting. I was reading something about an HR person talking about what HR people do all day, and I've actually become unwittingly very familiar with this, because when I got my coaching certification, a lot of people were and still are in the same place that I got certified are internal coaches. And so what that means is that they work in HR at all sorts of different companies, typically large ones, and they are becoming certified as a coach in order to coach people in their organization and create a culture with coaching that they call it and things like that. And so I end up on a lot of phone calls with people who work in HR, and their concerns are often how to help people through very personal situations that they are showing up in the office of the HR person to talk about. It could be something that does have sort of like an HR connection, such as like a family member's health issue that they're trying to figure out how to navigate, and they need to know how the benefits work for that. But they're also often things that are quite personal, like divorces and even just, you know, sort of issues of the more relationship variety and things like that. So I also think it's interesting for us to note that there are, in this, you know, umbrella, as I said, of the HR environment, there's also space for somebody who's your sounding board, who talks to you or who listens to you, more often is the case, about all sorts of issues that are going on. And that's one other thing that I see a lot, or rather hear on coaching calls and things like that, a lot of people missing. A lot of people are feeling very alone with their writing and alone with their business in a way where, you know, when something comes up, whether it's a client issue, and that's a lot easier to go bitch about on Facebook, or something that's more personal, you don't have your like work wife, work husband type person that you can turn to and talk to about it. You also don't have somebody you can go to if you really feel like you don't have anyone to talk about it. And so you end up kind of stuck in this little bubble. So I think that's one other area of human resources that those people are, you know, trained for, intending to be there for, that we often don't consider having somebody in that role. It was interesting, just in the week before I came here for this Traverse conference that I'm here for, I had lunch with another business owner, and it was like the worst day. Like, I had 0 minutes to do anything. I was like walking and writing like 3 emails, just like while walking a block down the street, just, you know, because I had to do so many different things at once. And I had lunch with this person, and it was so important because we talked about all of these random little kind of things, like business owner things. How do you do that? Why do you do that? Like, does that work for you? Like, what's going on with you right now? What are you frustrated about? All these kind of things. And it was so useful to have that conversation. And obviously, you know, finding somebody who's in a similar level as you, that you don't dislike chatting with, that, you know, you can get together when they're in the same place, all those things can present different difficulties. But I've heard from some other people who are location independent and not writers, but have a different job that they do location independent, that they do these wine or coffee dates with people where they'll have like a video Skype date with somebody just so that they can kind of be together, and they'll both have a drink of something depending on their time zone, and they basically do the same thing. So if just because there's not somebody in your area that you can coordinate schedules with to do this doesn't mean that you can't find somebody for that sort of function. So the last definition on here is human resources is in charge of dealing with all issues related to the people within your organization. This includes recruiting and hiring people, as well as onboarding employees, but it also involves tasks related to retain employees. Long term, for instance, HR might develop wellness initiatives, provide guidance regarding disciplinary actions, or promote career development or training programs to strengthen employee satisfaction. Additionally, HR handles compensation and benefits. Now, I have this definition last because it is my, I don't want to say like it's my most favorite. I don't think you can play favorite with definitions. That's kind of weird. But it's the one that encapsulates not just a lot of what we're going to talk about today and what I want to talk about today, but I really like how it encapsulates the purpose of HR. Obviously, they've got this thing that we've seen in a lot of these definitions about issues relating to the people within your organization, but then it talks about retaining people and particularly thinking about that in a long-term way, as well as this idea of onboarding. So it's interesting because I never think about calling it this when I'm working with people in a coaching setting, but this idea of onboarding yourself to your freelance life or to a new client or to a new physical location if you're nomadic or just traveling for a bit. I hear a lot of people also run into issues with re-entry, so like re-onboarding themselves to work after their vacation. These are all things that if you were in a corporate setting, you would be, let's say you were somebody who traveled like we do, and you were traveling a lot for work, there would be an HR person who you could come to them and say, gosh, you know, like I ran into somebody actually who does recruiting for an MFA program, for instance, and she and I talked a lot about this, how she's on the road like 40 plus weeks a year for work. And we talked about all these different things that she does. And, you know, she could go in and say to her HR person, gosh, you know, I feel like every time I get to a new place or every time I stop back into the office or whatever, I'm just having such a hard time getting going again. What should I do? How can I, you know, like get back on the ball? Are there some resources that I'm not using? Is there something we can do with my travel schedule to make it better? And that human resource person would like help her figure this out, right? You know, as I say like that, it almost makes me feel like the work equivalent of your school counselor, right? In terms of talking to you about relationships and things like this. But it's important to think about it that way, that in your overall conception of your company that you're building, there needs to be a place for the hat that you wear to be that person, okay? To be that person for yourself. And that might mean that you, in your weekly meeting that you have with yourself to look at your finances and your to-do lists and different things like that, you set aside some time to ask yourself these questions. And I have some questions that we'll look at later that are some sample ones that we can ask, but also those, like, these are some important ones. Like, what are you struggling with right now that we can make easier, right? But something that I wanted you to also notice is that most of the definitions that we looked at were lists of things that HR people do. And that is for a very important reason, because HR is, of all of the things that we're going to talk about, literally, including sales, marketing, everything, of all of the things that we are going to talk about in this series, HR is the one that is probably the most different from company to company in terms of what people do on a daily basis. And I don't mean like the people who are doing benefits and paperwork and like just looking at resumes that are coming in and stuff like that. I mean kind of like the slightly higher level HR people. This is probably one of the areas where there's the most divergence from company to company that I've seen about what people do on a daily basis. And that's because of this idea of company culture, okay? And so I heard a really cool analogy about this earlier today that was on a webinar. It was about business generally. It was about scaling your business and stuff like that. But he had a really cool way of describing what culture was. So he said, imagine a fish tank that's clear, and you see that some of the fish are sort of straggling and moving slowly, and they seem to not be doing well. Do you take out one fish and then another fish, and test them to see what's wrong with them? No, you test the water first. You test the water and see if there's something going on in the water. And he said, your culture is that water. So that's, you can think about that in a corporate setting, and that makes sense. But how that applies to us as freelance businesses, I know can often be a lot harder to imagine, because we don't think of ourselves as having a company culture. But I so promise you that you do. I could just go through like people that I know, like freelancers that I've worked with, and I could tell you what their company cultures are. They always have hallmarks. You know, some of them are perfectionist places where, you know, nothing but like the most work, working the most hours, like really stringing yourself out, like pouring your entire self into your work will be accepted. And we can think about other, you know, company cultures that look like that, right? There's a lot of them, right? We could think about, you know, this doesn't happen so much with freelancers, but I actually do know a couple like this. We, you know, there's some where it's like all about the numbers. Like it's all about sending out the most pitches, landing the highest value assignments, getting the work done quickly, moving on to the next thing in a very kind of Wall Street deals kind of way. Like those type of freelance cultures exist. I know some people like that. Then there's some people who are in a culture that, you know, I almost think about it like the room with the fireplace in the corner and like the very hygge kind of blanket. Like their culture is like almost like a dream library or something, where everything is very quiet and very calm and like has a pace, and it's very comfortable and very taken care of, right? So different freelancers all have these different cultures, whether they have intentionally created them for themselves, which is certainly the case for some people, or whether they're just holdovers of the way that they used to work in a different setting, right? Some people have a culture that's very about self-care, for instance. I know some folks like this, where it's very much about like you will absolutely do your walk or your exercise or going out or eating very healthy food or whatever, like where that is such a top priority. And the work like certainly comes next to that, but of course benefits from all these things. So culture is something that is central to what HR people do. But because it's like this invisible glue, it doesn't exactly show up anywhere. So it's kind of interesting, because all of these things that I'll go through right now that make up sort of on paper what HR is or what HR does or what have you, that or these different things, they all come together to form culture. And culture is interesting because, like I said, it's something that's kind of hard to pin your nose on. I was just describing some, but people tend to have a hard time kind of describing their own corporate culture, I find, even at, like in larger companies. But it's something that has a lot of moving parts to make it happen. And we'll talk, like I said, I'll go through these functions right now about what they are. But on the same other webinar that I was watching earlier from somebody else, he had a really great quote, which was from another kind of big name in business book publishing that you guys wouldn't know. But anyway, I don't remember which one he said. But it was that culture changes when leaders change. So the culture comes directly from leaders' behavior. So we're going to talk at the very end of this webinar series about you as the big boss, as the big manager of all of these different facets of your company, and how you are leading yourself, how you're leading your company into its future. But it's important to remember that these culture changes, like if you feel like your company is like very hectic and very perfectionist or whatever, like if you feel like that's how you're working, yeah, you have clients who might have certain expectations from you. But those are also things that you're allowing to be set, you're allowing to be working with those clients and all of those things. So your culture, no matter what it looks like, if it's not what you want, I just want to make sure that you know that you as the leader of the company of you are the one who can change that. So like whatever about your culture that you might not like, we can do something about it. Not necessarily we together, but like, you know, we like the community. There are always things here that you can change. So let's look at the different things that run into that, okay? So this came up in a couple of the definitions about HR that we looked at. Recruitment and selection. And even when I was looking at kind of how the average HR person spends their day, a lot of it does tend to be in recruitment, especially at companies. We're going to look at Google as a case study in a little bit, and I'll tell you why. But at Google, for instance, they have a policy of doing an average of 4 interviews with every candidate, and they're kind of obnoxious the way they do them. They also have random people who will never work with this person who are in a totally different team interview them for a couple different reasons. And so like interviewing and coordinating interviews and looking at resumes and all that is like a really big part of what HR people do. And I have that on here both because it's something that HR people do, and so it's kind of important to think about, but also because I want you to think about how you are putting yourself up for roles. As in, like, when you are applying either just by sending a cold content marketing letter or pitching an editor or actually applying to a job that's listing online, I just want you to also keep in mind that you are kind of deciding with your HR hat on to put the technician, the writer part of you, up internally for this position. And working with people on their resumes and helping them move around internally is totally something that HR people do. But they are obviously looking for the absolute best fit. And I think that a lot of times when I see folks telling me they've applied for X, Y, and Z thing that was on the internet, there's like two different types of replies. One is, oh, you know, I spent, I don't know, 15 hours this last week, like applying to things I saw listed online. I haven't heard anything yet. And the other side is, oh yeah, sometimes I apply to the jobs listed and I always find great jobs that way. And the difference between those two camps in terms of, you know, obviously there's efficiency difference there, right? One person's getting results, the other's not, but tends to come down to people who are only looking at the things that they're really qualified for. So I just wanted you to think about that when you're sort of, you know, putting yourself up for a position. Okay. So in terms of this training and development, this is obviously a big part of what HR people do as well. That's going to be something that's really relevant to us. And so when I come back to this slide and talk all about like sort of tips and tactics and strategies you can pursue for here, I'll come back and I'll talk quite a bit about this. But training and development in terms of creating onboarding procedures for employees, creating internal opportunities for development, you know, sort of coordinating external opportunities for development, training, even like obviously like sexual harassment training, diversity training, things like that. All of that comes under HR. But I specifically broke out 4 different things here. New employee orientation, we already talked about. Continuing orientation, I mentioned a little bit, and we'll get into that. But also this idea of career planning is big, okay? And I know that we have an annual review series in our webinar library, and we always talk about this towards the end of the year, but it's something to also be thinking about kind of all the time as well. And managing your manager is something that we will get into, because you all have managers, and they are all you, they are not your clients, and you need to think about how you are managing yourself and your workflow. So Compensation and benefits is obviously something that we feel like we don't have a lot of control over as freelancers, right? You get the clients that you have, you know, like you can negotiate a certain amount about what they pay you, but benefits is definitely something that we do have some leeway around in terms of what benefits you choose to give yourself. And I know, you know, being able to pop out in the middle of the day and do something or traveling, these all feel like great benefits, but those are also just function of your job. So there's also like real tangible benefits that you need to think about for yourself because it's an important part, this idea of rewards. It's an important part of work, getting work done, feeling valued for your work as well. So we'll talk more about that. And this idea of policy formation, this is actually something that I hear a ton about from the HR people that I know, is writing policies is really like a big part of what they do. And it's something that throughout this series we're talking about, right, is how way back in the very first webinar in the series, we looked at what are the job descriptions for yourself for all of these different areas, right? And that in and of itself is kind of a way of writing policies. But there's also this idea that policies for how you work, for what's acceptable, for what you will or won't put up with, you know, all these different things that if you're still in a full-time position, not as a freelancer, or that you, if you once were, that you might remember are posted like on message boards around and different things like that. This is also a core part of the HR function that I think a lot of us miss out on. Now, employee and labor relations is a little bit less so. This is more for things like when there's unions involved and different things like that. But also, what comes under this is this idea of like whistleblowing. So, I had an experience of this when I was in corporate America very briefly before moving over into academia, which was that somebody that I worked with who was like not my boss, but in a sort of managing a group that I did marketing for and stuff, did something super, super unethical and very problematic, and I had to go tell somebody about it, and then he was really nasty about it. And so, like, that's something obviously that we think about when we think about HR is like, oh, somebody told HR on somebody, or oh, you have to go to HR with this, or something like that. And that's one thing that is for sure lacking for you as a freelance business owner is having that person where if you've done something for yourself, for your business, that's not good, you know, whether it's you didn't negotiate something in a contract with somebody and now it's causing problems or something like that, there's no third party to go to, there's no whistleblower, all these things. But it's important to think about how that situation would be handled if you were not your boss and there was an HR person around. And I think it's like a very interesting question that I see these kind of things come up a lot and people handle them very, very different ways. Now, the last, oh, there's two more. The on risk management here, this is one that risk management from a legal perspective, we're going to talk about in the next webinar, but this is more in the way of making sure, one place that I saw mentioned, like making sure in hospitals that hazardous waste is disposed of properly so it doesn't create issues for employees and things like that. Also, risk management in terms of who's hired, like drug testing and background tests. These are all things that don't really come up for us quite so much. But this idea of strategic management, I just wanted to look at for this idea of human resource planning, okay? Because I mean, I can't really think of any one single freelance writer that I've ever talked to who has some idea about how they are stewarding themselves as a human resource past the current calendar year, whether that's, you know, setting an idea to grow the number of vacation days available or to add more benefits in the future or something like that. I really can't think of anyone I've ever talked to who has some ideas for that planning of stewarding themselves as a human resource that go more than a year out from the present time. So, like, sometimes people have goals that are very loose, like, oh, I'd like to spend more time with my family, or I'd like to do this, or I'd like to do that. But this idea of strategic human resource planning, I really don't see. And that's something that's very, very core, actually, to what human resource managers do today. And in fact, I know people who work in what are called HR innovation centers, in fact, who work a lot on these different things. So we've looked at these different areas of HR. I want to just step back for a second and put you in the shoes of an HR person in a company of any size. Now, obviously, these statistics are going to be really different depending on where you are, particularly for people who are, you know, perhaps living abroad in a country where they're not from originally because it's less expensive or because it's interesting or something like that. So these statistics change, you know, quite a bit from here to there. But This is the reality right now, guys. I looked at a lot of different places and I couldn't quite find one statistic that I found all-encompassing enough to include. But the situation is basically that globally, generally, right now, and this has gone back for like, I think until about 2014, I saw 70 to 80% of people are looking for a new job. What does that mean? I mean, does it mean that like the jobs suck? No, like you've probably heard the unemployment rate, at least in America, is really low right now. It's really a seller's market in terms of people who are looking for jobs have a lot of control, which means that for people in HR functions, literally like their most important thing to do right now, the thing that makes their paycheck make sense is for them to keep butts in seats. For them to keep employees super happy and engaged and staying in their job and producing, because finding a new employee and onboarding a new employee is a really expensive process. When I worked at MIT, I remember hearing that it costs about $1 million, I'm not kidding you, to get a new professor in. Okay, so let me break that down, because even I talked to my husband who had been in academia for a bit and has a lot of friends in academia, and he disagreed with me, and then we talked about this, and now he agrees. So $1 million to get a new professor in, okay? And I don't mean like their pay for life. So obviously there's having professors come and visit, there's like some staff time of reviewing different applications, different things like that. But it also breaks down into these other things that you don't think about, which is that when a professor goes somewhere, especially if they're a science professor, they need all sorts of equipment and different things like that. But then it also matters to them who their grad students are, that they're going to do research with, and other assistants and things like that. So the total package for a professor is not just their own salary. It's also going to be other rewards and benefits, or whatever you want to call them, which are going to be, you know, like a fancy new machine or money to bring in new students through scholarship or something like that. And then there's also relocation fees, which are not just moving the professor and their family from wherever they currently are, but they also might include temporary housing. And professors often get money towards having a house in an area, particularly if it's expensive. Somebody that I know at Princeton had an experience with this recently, but also really kind of largely in the news. There was a whole scandal of some kind that I don't quite remember exactly what it is. I'm sure you can look it up if you want, because it was a very big scandal. But there was some scandal involving some dean at Stanford and their significant other who was also a professor. And I think it was that they were getting divorced and the one professor who was part of this relationship was getting fired and there was like a wrongful termination suit or something. So that should be enough for you to look it up. But part of what was going into the suit was that they had been given a very substantial bit of money towards buying a house in the area because it's so unaffordable. So companies, when they right now are looking at talent retainment or talent recruitment or something like that, a lot of this goes into benefits and how do you make something really appealing for somebody. Now, I know so many people who have not left their jobs yet, who have like horrible bosses and all sorts of things, and just crave being out, crave having the freelance life, freedom over their time, you know, the ability to just go walk their dog in the middle of the day, all of these things. But that's not, that shouldn't be the full package, because it can't be. It's really not enough when your job of being a freelance writer gets difficult. That's not enough to retain you. That's not going to be enough just being able to control your own time or walk your dog or like go meet a friend in the middle of the day or work from somewhere else that's not, you know, your previous corner of the world. That's not enough to retain you. You need more. And you need to be, because no one else is, you're your own HR person, right? You need to be thinking about, what do you need to retain you? And it's twofold. I mean, it's manyfold we looked at, but it's not just about benefits and rewards and stuff. It's also about how to make you happy with the work that you're doing and engaged with it, okay? And so employee engagement is just an absolute major bit of what people are looking at right now, people who work in HR, that is, okay? Now, what does employee engagement mean, okay? I'm going to use an interesting example because it both has gotten a lot of press and sort of a lot of gossip, if you will. There's even a movie that's kind of sort of about this, but it's like a thriller, so it's scary. But I want to take a second and talk about the culture of these big tech companies, okay? Now, I don't want to talk about things that are getting a lot of attention right now, which is like this whole Silicon Valley bro culture, because I've been away from Silicon Valley too long to comment on that appropriately. So I'm not going into that. But I want to look at some of these things that we have heard a lot about, which is like Apple, I think, was really the first place where you would bring your dogs to work, for instance, right? There's a lot of things like that. And I want to look at these cool tech companies not because they do a lot of these cool work-life balance things that sort of make you feel like you don't work at a company, even though you definitely do. But I want to talk about them because they're actually very similar situations to what a lot of writers are in. Because, like, secretly, people who work at tech in tech, one of the reasons that they have food at the office and they bring in movies and all these different things is not just to keep them there all the time, but it's because they would stay there all the time anyway. Okay. People who write code for a living are like writers, and that once they are in their project, they're just sitting there usually, and they're just jamming away on this thing, and they are just totally focused, and nothing exists outside of their computer screen. Okay. And what does that sound like? It sounds like all of us when we're working, on a deadline or way in advance of our deadline and not in that procrastination zone, right? So there's that idea of we are very similarly people who just sit and do our things on the screen. We're not in a lot of meetings, we're not traveling around doing sales, we're not teaching. There's so many other types of jobs that we have very little in common with, but we have interestingly a lot in common with these computer engineers, okay? And so it's also that we get into like this deep flow state where we're working on our things. But besides that, there's this other thing, which is that the people in these companies tend to be very highly educated, highly intelligent, and also like quite independent. I don't want to say exactly like free-spirited, but they tend to be people who quite like people who are drawn to the freelance lifestyle, like kind of just want to do their own thing their own way, and they don't really see why they need to do it, this way just because the company has told them to. And it's interesting because I grew up in Silicon Valley, so I've seen how this idea of like the cubicle farms and the people who work in coding and all these things have changed over time, and I've watched how the Google offices have gotten, like really interesting and all of that, and how it's swung back and forth a little bit. But the reason that I want to use these tech examples is not just because they're cool and sexy and in the news, but because they have a lot to do with how people who are similar to freelance writers in terms of their work needs are catered to by HR innovation centers that spend tons and tons and tons of money and do tons and tons of experimentation about how best to support their employees. Okay. So this is a list, and this is like a very, I didn't even have to think this hard about this list. There's probably way cooler things that I'm not thinking about, but this is just a small list of things that, like, actually today Google provides for its employees. And I think that everything on here is free. Okay. There are some things that they do give Google employees discounts on and things like this, but everything on this list is provided to Google employees for free. So for instance, when a big movie is coming out, they'll book out the whole theater and they'll say, what time do you want to go on the opening day? They in the California campus, they have in the main campus, they have a couple different campuses now, but on the main campus, they literally just have like a vegetable garden, a very well tended, nice organic vegetable garden where you can just go pick the tomatoes and bring them home to make dinner. I'm not kidding, it's ridiculous. They have This is kind of like, it seems to me like one of the lamer things that Google does, but I think it's important from this HR perspective. They have nap pods, okay? Like, how many times, if you're still in an office or you previously were in an office, have you been at your desk and you're just like, I can't do it anymore. I can't. I'm just sitting here. I'm like practically sleeping. Google's like, great, stop. Go take a nap. Here's a nap pod. Go put yourself in it and take a nap for a while. They have not just coffee and not just great coffee. You can also go to, for instance, like a cafe place and get coffee for free where somebody's going to make you an espresso drink. But they also have on every single floor of the New York office, for instance, places where you can make your own fancy espresso machine. Because It's not just enough to give you free coffee. You should be able to have your coffee however you want it. If you really like to make the coffee, they want you to be able to make the coffee, and they want you to be able to make it with the best espresso beans and in an AeroPress or whatever. But then the things that Google does that I think not as many people know about are that they also have so many events going on, whether they're like frisbee games or concerts or, like some meet and greet things with employees, but they also have talks by people. So like they've brought in the cast of Hamilton and The Lion King and all sorts of stuff like that. And then they have groups for people who want to do, whatever they're interested in. I mentioned Frisbee earlier. In the New York office, they have a whole room of board games and they have board game nights, okay? So these things all seem really fun, right? They all seem like ways that the corporate culture is fun, or that the corporate culture cares about whatever you're interested in, or all of these things, right? And I mentioned how these are also to kind of, on the one hand, to keep the employees in the office, keep them working, give them everything that they need at the office, whether it's, medical attention or a massage or whatever. But also those more shades of things where you have literally in the New York Google office, for instance, they're across the street from this really great food market that has really wonderful food from really cool brands and everything. And the Googlers never go there because the food in their office is so good they don't need to go across the street, right? So they also are trying to provide things at the level that the type of people with the disposable income who work at Google, what they would want to have anyway. They also cater to your artistic interests, like I said, people from Hamilton and all of that. So they're really all-encompassing in terms of what would interest you? What would you like? We want to make that available to you to support you, to show both that we care and also to make it easier for you to get your work done, right? Because you're a happy person and you're connected to the company. So we can feel like that is like the Google culture, right? And we can think about how, oh, well, yeah, I could totally have my own like high-end coffee equipment in my apartment. Like that wouldn't that be great? And that would make my life easier. But do I really want to spend $300 on an espresso machine? I don't know if my company is going to make that investment. So these aren't examples. Like I'm saying exactly, I want you to go and do that thing. But I kind of want to show you like the full gambit of things that people who work in HR at Google are thinking about providing for their employees. Because for us as freelancers, sometimes some of these things can make a really huge difference. Like I said, the Nespresso machine might be one, right? Like I used to not have good coffee anywhere in my neighborhood, and so I'd have to walk like minimum, when I first moved to New York, it was like minimum 40 minutes to get like a good espresso drink or something, right? But like it didn't occur to me when I didn't have a lot of clients, oh, I could just buy myself an espresso machine, right? Like that didn't occur to me, but it could have been a really big quality of life improvement for me. But some of these are other ones that could be smaller, right? Like I've heard people talk about, like, I should just set up a regular tennis date, right? Or I should just go to a movie in the middle of the day because I can, or something like that. So some of these are much smaller things, like taking a nap, right? Like give yourself permission to take a nap. So these are meant to inspire you, but not necessarily to be like, here are all the things that you should do because Google does. I wanted more to show you this idea of how Google's culture is really enveloping, okay? Because, like I said, they're thinking about everything that might make the employee happy, keep them productive, keep them attached to coming, all these things, but it extends past that, okay? So if you go to the bathroom in a Google office, there are these printed sheets on the walls in all of the Google bathrooms that are tips for coding, for writing clean code. And sometimes they have these little case studies of like, if you run into this issue, like here's a way to fix it and all these things like that. So the Google culture is not just encompassing in terms of providing benefits, it's also encompassing and thinking of tiny touch points where they can contribute to their employees doing their best work, okay, right? Like, I wanted to offer up this Google example as this idea of what are some touch points where you can reduce some friction in your work life in a way that will make you generally happier, smoother, more engaged, healthier is also a big thing. One of the things that I also read about, there's a whole book, besides my own personal connection to Google, there's a whole book about how their HR works called Work Rules, Insights from Google. And they did this whole experiment where They have tons of free food at Google. They have restaurants. They have different things, but they also have these little snack sections everywhere. And this is pretty common to all of the tech companies. WeWork now has these things like this, where you just walk around and there's like a little section where you can get your coffee. And they also had snacks. And so they did some experiments with healthy snacks versus candy. Okay. And generally, one of the things that Google does with their snacks is that they have like quite cool brands. Like they have like the Pure, or whatever it's called, iced tea or things like that. I often find that I find something somewhere that I really like a new type of bar or something. And my husband's like, oh yeah, we've had this at Google for like 6 months. So what they do though is that they want people to eat healthier food so that they are obviously have more brain power, so that they're health like so that they're healthier in the long term, all sorts of things. For them, it is an investment in their employees to have their employees eat healthier food, but they can't be overly parental about it. So what they did is that they put all of the healthy snacks in glass containers, and they put them on higher shelves, and they displayed them really nicely. And then they put all the candy in colored containers so you can't see what's in there, and they put them lower down and harder to get to. And sure enough, they have stats on this, on the number of calories that were decreased by making these small changes in how the snacks are displayed. And I don't have the exact stat, but I think it was like 3.1 million calories fewer were consumed by the employees just at the New York office over 7 weeks of running this experiment. Okay. So there's things that you can do for yourself at different touch points from this HR sort of mindset. And they can be things like that. Like I said, like keeping the healthy snacks out on the counter instead of chocolate, so that when you're working and you're tired and you don't have time yet to stop for lunch, there's a healthy snack right in front of you. That might be something that you need to negotiate with your spouse. But if you have a work area, you can also keep them on your desk, right? Just keep a little jar of healthy snacks next to your desk. As long as they don't have so many calories that constantly snacking on them is going to make you sick, because that's not the goal of this HR healthy food thing, right? So think about what are some touch points for yourself where you can start to integrate some of these types of things. They can be really small. Like if you work by yourself, or sorry, live by yourself, put something interesting on the bathroom wall like they do at Google. I don't know. But think about what are just some little ways that you can show with your HR hat on, you can show your employee self that the company you cares about you. I know there's a lot of split personalities there right now. But this, like I said, is so crucial. Employee retention, engagement is the number one concern of every HR person right now. And what we do as freelancers, wearing all of these different crazy schizophrenic hats, weathering all of these client things, is really tough. Okay. And somebody needs to be looking out for us. And it can't always be our friends, partners, spouses, families, whatever. So whenever you do your next personal review or after this call or something like that, I want you to think of a couple touches. Now, the next step, though, is how to make sure those touches are right for you and your company, okay? I talked a lot about company culture earlier, which is this whole idea of this, the fish swimming in the water, right? So I've talked about a few different freelance company cultures. I've also talked, like I said, about Google culture and these different things that they do and how that presents in terms of what their culture is. But I just want you to take, I'm just going to give you like 10, 15 seconds, just off the top of your head, three words that encapsulate what you want your company culture to feel like. Just three, and how you want it to feel. I mentioned a couple different ones earlier. I mentioned ones that are more like sort of cozy, calm. I mentioned some that are more like about the numbers and accomplishment and like success. I mentioned some, not necessarily in the most positive light, but that are about, perfectionism and really wringing out like the last drop of everything. But what is your ideal company culture for yourself? I bet a lot of you went into freelancing, whether you're still in your day job or not, but I bet a lot of you went into freelancing having an idea of what it was, and then probably realizing at some point that it didn't look like that. So what was that ideal? Okay, great. You've got three, I hope. Okay. So the next question becomes, how do we go about creating that, and then also doing the split personality work of making sure that somebody is there thinking about that. So let's just look again at these main HR functions. So I talked a little bit about recruitment and how to think about that. But also, you can think about that, like I said, when you're applying for gigs or when you're looking at prospective clients, does this prospective client fit into my company culture? Does the language they use fit into the way that I want my company to be interacting or the environment that I want to put myself in, right? But like I said, I want to take some time to talk about this training and development. So new employee orientation, I mentioned how it's something that, you know, I don't see so many people quite thinking about. Some people do, but you might also want to think in terms of from this cultural standpoint about new client orientation, and not just for your clients, but for you. What is your sort of internal HR way that you get set up to work with a new client, okay? I also talked about sort of an interesting subset of this, which is onboarding yourself after a trip. And it can also be onboarding yourself for a trip, you know, like to be working in a new place or offboarding yourself from being at home. So there's a lot of sort of subsets of that orientation type thing. But this idea of continuing education is really big. And I wanted to take a second to talk about this. So this comes up periodically where people will ask me why I go to so many conferences or what I'm doing at different conferences. And I explain that I actually have to be really judicious every year, even though it seems like I go to a lot, because I'm trying to cover a lot of different bases and travel, actually, at least in terms of spending the whole day at conferences, as little as I can. But the problem is that I want to be learning and developing and having information to share with all of you guys on how to run a business, how to do, you know, digital marketing and sales and all those things for our small businesses. Then what's going on in digital content, period, but particularly in the travel space. Then what's going on with particularly travel writing and travel writers, and how is that changing as opposed to just digital content in the travel space, but us for as travel content business owners specifically. And then there's the whole field of magazine writing and what's going on with magazines, what's going on with editors, what's changing for people who are writing for those magazines. Then likewise with content marketing writing for companies and tourism boards. And then likewise for writing for books and in the book publishing industry. So I'm trying to touch a lot of different bases, but then I also think about them in a couple different ways. So there's conferences that I go to almost strictly to learn things. Like it's typically when I'm going to a conference for something that I know zero about, like, I don't know, if there's like a new type of technology, what, you know, video or some new social or something like that, I might go to a conference to just try to like learn, soak things up, talk to people, get answers to my questions. So there's ones that are more informational. Then there's conferences that I go to that are for business development. So it means that maybe I'm sponsoring or maybe not, but I'm going there with the intention of picking up new business. Now, I mention this a lot, that if you are a freelance writer for business development, you should go to the conferences where your ideal clients are hanging out, which means you should go to the conferences for them, not to the conferences for freelance writers. You're not going to a freelance writer conference to pick up clients, okay? But then the third sort of function of conferences is to network with your peers or people at a similar level or a level just past you. Now, that's what you might be going to conferences with freelance writers for. And that's why I come to, you know, this conference Traverse, there's more learning. But for instance, like TBEX, I might go there to talk to other people who've had, you know, online companies in the travel space for a long time that I've known for a while and see what's going on and what's changed and have kind of some of these big discussions about where the industry is going and things like that. So those are three different sort of function. So there was learning, business development, and networking, okay, were the three different functions of that. Now, but besides that, that's continuing education of going to conferences, right? But then there's also continuing education that you're doing online. Obviously, there's webinars like mine. There's books that you can read. There's a lot. There's so many business books. I often mention these in the webinars in our business series, but there's a lot that are really foundational that can be really eye-opening that I would really love to see more of you guys, if not reading, at least like reading some cliff notes on Medium or something like that. So there's a lot of different continuing education. And like I said, I usually think of that as falling into a few different buckets. So there's continuing education on being a business. There's continuing education on the craft of writing, right? So those are like the two polar opposites. Then there's continuing education on what's going on in an industry. And that industry might be digital marketing, that industry might be book publishing, that industry might be online travel content, that industry might be, you know, tourism boards, different things. So there's the, like I said, there's the industry updates, then there's the running of the business, and then there's the writing craft. So those are the three different types of sort of areas of continuing education that I recommend you think about tending to. Now, like I said, under this training and development, there's also career planning and managing your manager. We're going to look at managing your manager on another slide. But this idea of career planning is something that, like I said, I want to recommend that you think about besides just the annual review. If you have a weekly check-in that you do with yourself, that's probably more at looking at your numbers and, you know, how many pitches you need to be doing this week, what income do you have coming in, different things like that. When I say career planning here, I mean being strategic about what clients you're going after, how you balance your portfolio of clients, different things like that. Now, compensation, benefits, and rewards. Remember, this is something that I said, like, it seems like we don't have a lot of control over, but you really do. And so some of this is goal setting, right? You know, we're going to talk about sales, I think, towards the end of this month. And so some of this is, like, as a company, setting a goal about what income is going to come in so that you can pay yourself a certain amount. But I also find that, and we looked at this a little bit, but not in, like, huge depth, the separation between church and state of finances and what finances go for what is usually like a very murky swamp that we're all swimming in, right? So there's also this idea that your compensation to yourself of what is separate from your business income is also something that you can think about as sacred, even with whatever your numbers are right now. And so there's a certain amount that you can think about. This is my salary. Like, this is part that I just get. Like, when I used to have a job, and I don't think about this as something that is also covering, you know, my travel expenses and my this and my that and my other thing. This is something that just comes to me, and this is something where I can feel like, oh, you know, if I want to buy something for myself personally, like, it comes out of this. This is my money. This is not like the larger business budget or something. So you can definitely think about compensation in that way. But then also this idea of benefits and rewards, right? So, like, there's a company that I like to look at as a model for a lot of location-dependent things called Basecamp. And they actually have their entire employee handbook online. So they actually provide a certain amount every month for their employees for things like yoga classes or gym memberships or whatever. But they also provide a certain amount for a CSA and some different things like that. So it's totally legit on your taxes and everything, okay, for you to give yourself some of these benefits through your company, okay? And like I mentioned the coffee machine example before, that's actually an office expense, okay? That's not something that you're like, oh, should I think about this? It's an office expense, okay, period. You write it off in your taxes as an office expense. So some of these benefits that might make a huge difference for you in terms of happiness and engagement, like feeling valued, feeling that your work is giving you things like this, are potentially relatively small things to think about. So this goes back to those touch points like I was talking about. And like, I don't love the idea of perks, of like thinking about it as perks, like it says in the Basecamp thing that I just put in here. Benefits is one, rewards is like a kind of another way of looking at it. But like I said, I like to think about it more as culture. Is your culture of your company around maintaining you as a human resource in a very healthy fashion? Like, is that a priority? Healthy humans. Like, is that one of your three, you know, I guess it would be two words, but is that one of your three things that you want to use to define your corporate culture? Now, I mentioned this a little bit when we looked at this slide before, but this idea of policy formulation is definitely something that I recommend kind of putting on your to-do list generally, because it might make a lot of decisions much easier for you to have some policies that you write out from an HR perspective around different things. And those could be really simple. For instance, they could be like, I do not walk the dog or do house chores during business hours. That could be like a freelance HR policy, okay? Or it could be something about, you know, running errands for other people or meeting other people during the day. Like, that could be one, whatever it is for you. I'm just thinking of a couple things that I've heard people mention recently. But these policies can also be around, you know, what clients you do or don't work with, or, you know, what words are, you know, if somebody says this to you that like require you to revisit the relationship, all sorts of different things, okay? So like the HR policy segment is something that you can really read a lot more about online. It's quite dry, but in case it's a road that you want to go down, I find that kind of thinking about these things conceptually and putting them on paper can be really freeing for a lot of folks. I've worked with some people on this in terms of how they say yes and no to things and what permissions that they give themselves in their business. So if that's something that you find is difficult for you, that might be a place to invest a little bit of time. Now, I mentioned that these other ones are not so apropos to our area. And strategic management, I mentioned a little bit earlier, is this thing where I really would love to have some more people telling me that they have some, you know, HR goals or HR plans for themselves, whether it's a vacation or, you know, including a CSA as a benefit for yourself or whatever that is, whatever idea that you might get from this webinar today or have afterwards. So one last thing that I want to leave you with, and we're going to get to management later in this series, is this idea of a big part of what HR does is in a sort of manage, I don't know if you want to say managing, but or overseeing really, but being involved in the interaction between employees and their managers. This is a big part of it, okay? And you'll notice that I didn't talk about performance reviews because I feel like A, nobody likes those, but B, we kind of talked quite a bit about the various things that go into those in operations. And to be honest, I think that in some corporate settings, a performance review is just like the only time of the year that employees hear how they're doing, or it's the only time of the year that people really get to bitch about their bosses. So I want to look, rather than talking about this idea of performance reviews, which we all think of as a very HRE function, I want to take a second to talk about the idea of a manager review. So this next slide, if it ever manages to move forward, is from the book that I mentioned called Work Rules, which is the book about Google's HR culture and different experiments that they've run. And this list of questions for this survey is something that they actually do twice a year. And it was really interesting, the stats that they had about how this improved not just perception of manager performance, but also overall employee engagement, because people felt like their managers were more looking out for them. And I can tell you, because I talked to so many folks, even like right now I'm at a conference and just, you know, over lunch we were chatting about this stuff, that a lot of the expectations that we set for ourselves as freelancers are way beyond what we would ever have in an office setting from a boss. I mean, if you had a really crazy stressful job like working in finance or something like that before, maybe this isn't true, but I bet that they are. And so one of the hats that we must wear in our HR capacity is as the go-between between our manager selves and our worker selves to control the, you know, I don't know if you want to call it severity, but the intensity of those expectations that we put on ourselves. But this is a really cool survey that they do twice a year at Google that I typed it all out for you. I didn't have a typed version. I had to type it out from the book just because I find it really interesting to think about how we're managing ourselves, because that's really one of the most important functions of employee engagement. Something crazy like 90% of people, I saw the statistic, leave their jobs because of their relationship with their boss. And I think there's also this axiom out there that people stay in bad companies because they have good bosses, and people leave good companies because they have bad bosses, right? So how you quote unquote boss yourself, but how you are interacting with yourself as your own manager is a really important part of this human resource discussion, okay? So the questions on here are, you're supposed to just kind of rate them yes or no. I think they might also have a numeric system, but you can really decide. I didn't want to put too much on here. You can decide how you want to administer this, okay? But the points are, my manager gives me actionable feedback that helps me improve my performance. Is that something that you're doing? Because this is something that I see a lot of people skipping, and it can be really wonderful to give yourself the permission to just debrief in an actionable way about something that's happened without bringing, you know, whether you want to call it emotions or whatnot, but to look at, you know, things that you've gone through as a company and just debrief them with yourself as if you're a manager giving actionable feedback, okay? My manager does not micromanage, i.e. get involved in details that should be handled at other levels. My manager shows consideration for me as a person. My manager keeps the team focused on our priority results and deliverables. Are you doing that for yourself as your own manager? Are you kind of checking in with yourself to stay focused on results and deliverables? My manager regularly shares relevant information from his or her manager and senior leadership. This is an interesting one because for us, that kind of ties into this idea like I was talking about the continuing education, right? So it's like bringing in information from what's going on in the industry would kind of be a similar one here. My manager has had a meaningful discussion with me about my career development in the past 6 months. Right. This is what we were talking about before. Career planning isn't something that you should just do at that annual level. My manager communicates clear goals for our team. That's another one that I know is something that we can be wishy-washy on. My manager has the technical expertise required to effectively manage me. This is a really interesting one because I see this a lot, especially with people in the blogging space, but even with writing, for people who are a little worried about their craft side of their writing. Do you have the technical expertise required to know if you have done a good job or not? We talked about doing a good job last week in quality control and what that really looks like and what that means. But I think this idea of having the technical expertise to manage your own work and your own projects, if you don't have it, like go back to the continuing education section and beef up on that, okay? Now, next one I find can be really kind of like earth-shattering. You would recommend your manager to others, right? So how would you compare yourself to other managers that you have had in your career in the past? Okay, so I want to leave you guys with that. And so the next webinar in this series, we're going to go into legal issues. I had some really interesting chats with people today about that from a social media perspective that I'm interested to share with you. And then we're going to talk about the technical support aspects. And I have pulled together already some cool things for you guys on this as well. People are always asking me for my app recommendations. So we'll go through that. And I might show you some of the ones that I have in my login and show you. We'll see how that works out for time. And then we're going to get into sales, marketing, all these things that I know that we usually spend so much time talking about. So thank you so much for joining me today. And I hope that I inspired you with some different ideas and didn't make you too jealous of people who work at Google. And maybe you're going to go get yourself an espresso machine after this, or at least a movie ticket, right? So I will talk to you guys next week.